Today on the AV Podcast, we bring you our 2016 year-end review. It'll be broken down into two separate pods. On part one, I'm joined by Kevin W., past contributor to South Shore AV, as we discuss the recent passing of both Alan Thicke and Craig Sager, the overwhelming amounts of celebrity deaths this year, as well as the deaths that affected us the most, what it all means, plus much more. To subscribe to the pod and the blog, make sure you go to SouthShoreAV.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAV.com. It's the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Shore AV Radio.
Welcome to the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Shore AV Radio.
Normally, I'd come in right about now, but I'm going to wait for the drums to kick in. So, with all the deaths that we've seen this year, especially the ones that affected us, I feel like it's only right to throw it back and use Pete Rock and CL Smooth as the background sound of the podcast today. It's been a crazy year, man. Whew, it's been a crazy year. Let's get into it together. All right, let's start the show. Welcome to the AV Podcast. Once again, I got past contributor to the AV, Mr. Kevin W. Kevin, what's up? What's going on?
What's going on, Calvin? Good to hear from you again, man.
Yeah, it's good to hear from you as always, man. So, 2016, huh? it's been a crazy year when it comes to people staying alive.
Actually, Calvin, I would say that 2016 will be looked at historically as one of the craziest years ever for a number of reasons, not only for the people that we lost, but also for some of the people that we've elected. Globally?
Right. It's been ridiculous. I mean, I agree. This is going down as the craziest year when it comes to celebrity deaths, especially. You know, they usually say that death comes in threes, but that saying got beaten over the head to the point of mutilation this year. We not only lost celebrities, but we lost polarizing ones, creative ones, iconic ones, people who inspired you to make you happy, to make you laugh, to make you cry, to make you think, and to even help you grow. And when you add it all up, the quantity, the amount of deaths, to me, makes it the year of the Reaper for me. That's how I'll remember 2016 in terms of what comes to my head when I think of this year. You know, you almost became desensitized to it all, to be honest with you. You know, for me, honestly, I'm just grateful that it wasn't anyone that I knew personally, no friends, no family members, that type of thing. No loved ones. I remember there was a year, I want to say it's like 2008, 2009. There was a year, Kevin, where I went to about, I'm not lying, I went to about, I want to say like 8, 9, 10 funerals in one year. It was to the point I had to turn them down. Like, that it was that much, you know?
That's heavy, yeah.
You know, so at least I didn't experience anything like that this year, thank God. But yeah, honestly, just this year has just been, it's just been ridiculous. Like, yeah, it seems like every other week you're turning on the news like, what? Who? No, are you serious?
Year's been, or it's insane. On the ticker of like a sports beat or CNN or something like that.
Right.
You know, or Fox News. There's, yeah.
Petroleum went up 10 cents. Oh, yeah, by the way, so-and-so died. You're like, what? Did I just read that right?
Petroleum? Yeah. Sorry.
But yeah, like, it's just been an insane year. Like, just, I'll even go over the list of deaths. I mean, there's too many to mention, but it's almost too long to read, but I'm going to try it anyway. It started the year off with Natalie Cole passing away. She died on New Year's Eve of 2015, but it was basically announced in, you know, January 1st, the next day, that she passed away. So you start with her. Then I'm just going to go down in basically chronological order of when these people passed away. So Natalie Cole, David Bowie, Rene Angelil, that's the manager and the husband for Celine Dion. Alan Rickman, the main villain from Die Hard, and, you know, one of the main characters in Lord of the Rings, he passed away. Glenn Frey from the Eagles passed away. Maurice White from Earth, Wind & Fire, Vanity, who was Prince's protege, Rob Ford, which was the former mayor of Toronto, as you all know, Fife Dog, Gary Shandling, and the concept of when deaths happen and they happen in threes. This happened so many times this year, but the Ford, Fife Dog, and Gary Shandling deaths all happened within a span of like 2 or 3 days. Leon Haywood, the 70s soul singer, he had the main song called, was most popular song that we would think of or know of, is called I Want to Do Something Freaky to You. It's the same beat that Dr. Dre sampled for Ain't Nothing But a G Thing.
Sampled or copied and pasted almost directly.
Well, that too. Pearl Washington, for all you older ball heads, you would know, he modernized a crossover. He was one of the biggest point guards in college basketball back in the 80s. Played for Syracuse. China, from the WWE fame. Prince, which again, the concept of threes, those three deaths happened, I think, within the span of like 2 days, once again. Billy Paul, the Me and Mrs. Jones singer. Afeena Shakur, Tupac's mother. Morley Safer from 60 Minutes, Muhammad Ali, Kimbo Slice, Gordie Howe, Prince B from PM Dawn, for all you PM Dawn fans, Gary Marshall, Miss Cleo, call me now, she passed away. The one that was shocking for me as well is John Saunders. That was a big one. Ryerson's own, you know. Mr. Fiji, WWE manager. Remember that? I know you remember who that is. He used to wear the bowler hat.
He used to blow that dust in Hulk Hogan's face every time he was wrestling Yokozuna, of course.
Gene Wilder, who was that was one of my. I used to love him back in the day, like in terms of his some of the movies he used to do back in the day. And underratedly, one of my favorite movies that he did was a movie called Blazing Saddles. If whoever didn't see that, it's an old movie from the 70s, a Mel Brooks directed movie. It's hilarious. Jerry Heller, former manager of NWA, he passed away. Shorty Lowe, people may call him a one-hit wonder, but that Dano song was huge back in 2008. I mean, that was mega. Bill Nunn, otherwise known as Radio Raheem, passed away. Jose Fernandez, the phenom Marlins pitcher for the Miami Marlins, who he passed away. What was it again? He passed away, basically, he died on a speedboat at the middle of the night, but he was online to sign a $200 million contract, Kev.
That was devastating.
Yeah, that was devastating. I mean, he was 24. Like, that was ridiculous.
You remember the game afterwards, teammate hit that home run and just broke out.
I remember that. I remember watching it and being like, man, is it dusty in here? Oh, my allergies, man. Arnold Palmer, he passed away. Rod Temperton, the legendary songwriter from the 70s, he's the one that wrote Michael Jackson's Thriller. Tommy Ford, you know, for all the fans of Martin, Tommy Ford, I mean, that one blew us away, too. Leonard Cohen, that was big for the music community. Sharon Jones from the Dap Kings, the lead singer, she passed away after a long illness with cancer. Florence Henderson, the mother from the Brady Bunch, she passed away. Fidel Castro, I mean, for the world, that was a huge one, obviously. And then recently, we're recording this on December 17th, so Alan Thicke this week passed away. And a couple of days ago, we lost Craig Sager after a long bout with leukemia. He's been suffering for the last 2 to 3 years. He had 3 bone marrow transplants, and fortunately, he lost his battle with leukemia. I mean, just that list alone, I mean, it's from all phases, all walks of life, different types of crafts, everything else is, I mean, geez, like, that's a ridiculous list. And look how long that was. And I mean, I left people off this.
You're right. I actually was taking a look myself, and I had to catch myself because I was basically thinking, like, was that this year?
Yeah.
That's true. They did pass away.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it kept happening. And even like this week, it was just like, okay, we lost Alan Thicke. Oh, wait a second. Craig Sager just passed away. Now it's time to evaluate, I guess, the impact that they've had in our lives, right?
Right.
It's just, or to just think about it, like reflect, like that name, it'll always trigger something in people's minds. So Well, sorry about that, man.
No, it's all good.
You're right, Calvin. It gives us a chance to actually look back and reflect on like what impacts these people may have had in our lives, especially the fact that just the saying a person's name can really trigger a memory or bring out a feeling that you may have.
Yeah, it definitely brings back, like, for example, just this past week with Alan Thicke, I mean, that's a part of your childhood, right? Anybody who watched Growing Pains, who sung the theme song for Different Strokes, Facts of Life, and then on top of that, you know, obviously his son is Robin Thicke, who's, you know, a big R&B star at this point too. I mean, just learning about, I didn't even realize that somebody like Alan Thicke, like, he wrote theme songs. So you can see where the musical, you know, the path was kind of laid for even Robin Thicke. You know, obviously Robin Thicke took it to a much bigger level, but, you know, right. but I mean, the seeds were planted from those days, I'm sure. So even watching something like that, I mean, I grew up watching Growing Pains, Who's the Boss, you know what I mean? Like, we all did, right? Perfect Strangers, Family Matters, all that stuff. And just watching something like that, it just makes you rewind your mind back to the 80s. You know, when you were, like, for me, when I was a little kid, like, watching that show, waiting for whenever it used to come on during the week, right? So watching something like that, it's like, man, it's like a part of your childhood again, gone, you know? And then the whole thing with Craig Sager, I mean, he was great at his job. I mean, and it's funny because it shows you how tight the NBA community is, because they basically shut it down for him on Thursday night, which is, I thought it was amazing. And that speech that Steve Kerr did, and instead of having a moment of silence, having the moment of applause, I thought that was sick. I thought that was dope. And a great way to honor somebody who, you know, definitely out of all things you would never call him is quiet. Right.
Right.
From his clothes on down. So I thought that was a great way to honor him.
Well, think about this, because we're huge sports fans, right? So the loss of Craig Sager it resonates with us. But I'll say this about Craig Sager. He's like two people for me, because consider that he's maybe on TV for maybe 5 minutes at most during an entire game.
Yeah.
He asked a couple questions at the beginning of a quarter. His interactions with Popovich was almost like, it's almost the most hilarious thing on television, right?
Right.
In sports. Shaq and a fool, hate to say it, comes in second or third place. But his interactions, his sideline commentary was amazing. But to me, Craig Sager was like basketball's fashion version of Don Cherry. And he's our modern day Jimmy V.
That's a good point.
Yeah, because we saw somebody that, you know, we identified with in sports and everything succumb to cancer. So Jimmy V was about 30 years ago,
right?
I believe. Somewhere in the range of 30 years ago. Some of us may have been way too young, or we didn't really get it. But to see somebody like, oh, here's this vibrant guy, this energetic guy, this guy with personality, and he was...
Yeah, I think it was earlier 90s he passed away. I think it was like 93, so about 23 years. Either way, yeah, but...
Okay. So, in that aspect, it's like he represented those two things for me, and he's no longer with us, but he won't be forgotten.
Shaq had a comment that it was a nice comment that he said about him, where he said that as a player, part of his dreams was obviously, of course, other than making the NBA and being successful, was being interviewed by Craig Sager, because when you got interviewed by Craig Sager, it meant that it was after the game, and it meant that you did work. So his goal, especially when he play off games and big things, he was like, my goal was by the end of the game, I got interviewed by Craig Sager, because that means I did my job and I did it well. Looking at Craig Sager was like the barometer of like winning an award, like a player of the game award. You know what I mean? Even though you didn't get anything for it. But just seeing him there was like, that was an accomplishment. To be viewed in that way, I think that's a positive thing for yourself, right? Like to be viewed that way, you're viewed as success. Every time they see you, that's a level of success. That means I did something great that day. You know, and
there are a lot of people on this list. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, go ahead.
There are a lot of people on this list. I would say that one thing that's important that we shouldn't overlook is the fact that he never stopped fighting.
Oh, 100%. You know what I
mean? Like he kept going even though he'd gone through bone marrow transplants that we may or may not have been aware of, but he was still on the sidelines. And yeah, he was looking a little bit you know, he was looking a little bit gaunt. You can tell, like, you know, the body was starting to tighten up a little bit, like to shrink a little bit. But he kept doing his work, and he made no excuses. So that's important too.
It's extremely important because you got to remember this guy was getting his cancer treatments in the morning, and then by evening he was back on the sidelines, you know, doing his job. You know, which most, you know, and like most people wouldn't be able to have the energy or the strength to even get out of bed. You know, so the fact that he fought for so long, you know, I seen the hashtag this year, fuck cancer. And honestly, that's, how do you not feel that way? You know what I mean? Cancer's a bitch, man. Like, it just is taking out so many people that we've watched, we've enjoyed their craft. And for a lot of people, you know, myself included, that's affected my family. You know what I mean? Like, I lost an aunt a few years ago from cancer. And I mean, it's like you hear that word and it's like you gotta put the gloves on and get ready to go. It just, it's honestly a really tough thing to manage, man. You know, it's so my heart goes out to him and his family, of course, and not just that, but just anybody that's even dealing with something like that. You know, to have the courage to fight through that every day. I think that's something that we have to carry just on our day-to-day lives. Just the ability to fight and the ability to never give up, the ability to live and, you know, be able to follow your dreams. And so I think that's super important as well. That's the message that, you know, you get from him, especially. And and then even with the, you know, just to touch back on Alan Thicke for a second, just to tell you just how crazy death is. I happened to be listening to the Dan Lebatard show, and he came on as a prosecutor, basically he was making gambling bets about 5 football games and whatever. He came on for like a few minutes, and it was so hilarious, you know, that when he was on there, you know, and that was like 3-4 days before he died. You know what I mean? Like, it just took everybody, like, it took everybody out. So he wasn't battling an illness or anything like that. He just had a heart attack, and that was it. You know,
playing hockey with his son,
doing something that he loved.
Right? Yeah.
And it's funny because I think his story, too, is I think he was the one that introduced Wayne Gretzky to Bruce McNall. Like,
wow.
think of the ties for that. And on top of that, I remember the day that I remember hearing about this, the day that he got traded from Edmonton to L.A., he was babysitting Robin Thicke at Alan Thicke's house, and he left Robin Thicke by himself. He took off.
That I remember. Yeah.
I remember hearing that story, and I'm like, oh, like that, like, so just to tell you how crazy that that all ties together too.
Wild, man. You were a huge Growing Pains fan, right?
Yeah, I used to watch it. I mean, it's something I definitely watched. That was definitely part of my, I wouldn't say it was my favorite show, but it was definitely something I watched every week.
You know, the funny thing when we're going through this list, it's like, I get that this is just me, but I'm sure it happens for all of us, right? We have certain people that are frozen in time in our memories. Like, we have an idea of what they look like, what they did, and we, like, compartmentalize them as something, right? So Alan Thicke is part of my youth.
Right.
Right? Like, and, like, the sitcom era of TV and everything like that. Didn't know that he had, like, reached in other aspects of, you know, sports and his son in the business and everything like that. But, like, we also have, like, my sports heroes. Like, every year I'm just like, okay, I just hope my sports heroes are okay, or I hope my celebrities are okay, or my favorite musicians are okay, like the ones that touch my youth, right. Like, it's that impact. It's just like the power of one can't be understated. I've got to say, like, people can have a sincere impact on your life for the better, for the worse, to make you think, to make you act, or just it's just something to consider. But sorry, go ahead, Cal.
Just segueing into that, I'll ask you, what was the death or deaths that affected you the most this year? I mean, for me, I can say for one, I shouldn't even put it in order, but one person was Fife, Fife Dog from A Tribe Called Quest, because for me, number one, as a fan, it signalized the end of possibilities that I wouldn't get to see one of my favorite groups of all time in concert anymore. Number two, it also reminded me of my days in high school. But, you know, back in the day when my focus was about school, hoops, music, and overcoming my shyness.
Right.
Like, Midnight Marauders, Kevin, no lie, that stayed in my knapsack for a solid year or more before I even took it out. You know, that was one of my, I wouldn't even say it's one of the my favorite hip hop albums ever. That's just one of my favorite albums ever, period. And I always said this, like, and I mean, shit, I the listeners of the podcast would know that I'm a huge fan of Tribe. Obviously, I did a friggin' podcast mix with DJ Chris Dice, you know, on it earlier this year. I think the second episode of The Av, actually, that I ended off because I think the day after that we recorded the podcast, Fife passed away. And we did a little little outro thing at the end for him. So for me, it just signalized happiness for me, Kev. Like every time I heard Fife, and I saw Fife, Q-Tip, you know, Alicia Hee, Jarobi, it just signified happiness. Like even to this day, if I'm feeling down, I can put on, you know, Midnight Marauders or some sort of Tribe album or mix or what have you, and all of a sudden I'm upbeat again. You know, like that's a powerful thing to do. You know what I mean? Just like you're think about it. Like something that you do, your passion is so powerful, it makes people just generally, it just changes the emotions. You know, their mood changes. They change the emotion of how you feel about what's going on in your day. You know what I mean? Like just something, the concept of that is ridiculous. That's amazing. You know what I mean?
Well, to me, that's music.
Yeah, no doubt. But I think for them, especially like for them, it doesn't matter what's going on. I can listen to Tribe and I can get happy. I can play that in my house right now, and my wife is dancing, my kids are dancing. You know what I mean? Like it's crazy. Like for me, and I'll tell you a quick story here. Like I went to a concert. I got a chance. I was blessed enough to get a chance to see them in 2006. They came to concert the day after my birthday, and it was one of those concerts because, you know, Tribe was already broken up and they got back. I think it was part of some video game. I don't know if it was NBA Live. It was some video game tour that was going on, and they were a part of it. It was like them and a few other rappers. And it's one of those concerts, you know, when it goes out for the public and it's the tickets are gone within 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Like by the time you go online and try to press the button and you try to refresh the screen, it's already gone. It's over. Like, so it was right. One of those. And I remember that day I was like, I don't care what happens. I know I'm going to this concert. I know I have no tickets. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to this show. And again, day after my birthday, I went to my sister's house. My sister had baked me a cake and, you know, had like, and her children wanted to come and celebrate it with me. So I said, okay, I'm going to drive over there. And at the time she didn't live too far from my house. So as I was driving, Kevin, I got to the intersection and I got a phone call. Yo, you still want to go see Tribe? I'm like, yo, don't play with my emotions, dog. It's like, yo, be here in a half hour. Kevin, I did a Dukes of Hazzard. I left tire tracks in the middle of the intersection. I drove home, put on my Tims, and I lived in, you know, at the time I lived in Scarborough. I went from Nielsen in the 401 to in front of the government doors in 20 minutes. Like parked. I found parking, everything. Like I was standing waiting in front of the doors in 20 minutes. And I'll tell you, Kevin, that was one of the best concerts that I ever went to because my face hurt by the time the show was over. I was so happy the whole show. You know what I mean?
And you probably broke some speeding laws in order to get there. So
yeah, we won't discuss that. I mean, the statute of limitations for that is over now. So, you know, it's okay. But but again, like that's to tell you, just the pure joy. And it wasn't just me. Everybody felt that way. Like just the pure joy. You saw it on everybody's face in that crowd, you know, like wall to wall packed. You can barely move. But everybody was one when they came on stage. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like to lose the foundation of that. It's yo, that was for me. That was huge, man. My day was shut down when he passed away.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that part of it is because he represents your youth?
Well, definitely, 100%, because those were simpler times, right? You know, when you become an adult, you got much more responsibilities and everything else. But those days just remind you of just simpler times, happier times when, you know, like things were less complicated, right? We might have thought it was complicated back when you were a teenager, but they always represent good times whenever you think back on it, you know. But they were like the soundtrack for us back then. You know what I mean? I mean, I know I can speak for you for that because you were one of those kids that had that album, their albums in your knapsack too.
I think, who had it? Someone had it on CD, and I think that made the rounds really quick. Was it Chris?
I'm not even sure. I'm not even sure. But yeah, but it's one of those where it's like it just stayed. It took a long time for me to take that out of my knapsack, you know. So like I said, to lose somebody of that caliber for me, like it shut my day down, man. I was just down the whole day. It just shut my day down.
I do remember the days when we would lend each other CDs or tapes, and then it's like, yeah, I'll just give it back to me tomorrow or in 2 days or something like that. You know, Tribe is one of those albums, like especially Midnight Marauders. That's one of those that you just would not lend, no matter if it was your best friend or not. You're like, nah, guy, nah. It's like when I had NBA Live and someone wanted to borrow it, NBA Live 95, and I'm like, yeah, just lend it to me for, no.
Yeah,
but I live next door, Stay
yeah,
right here.
Yeah, it was one of those albums where it's like, okay, cool, give me the blank tape and I'll bring it back for you tomorrow. Like, it wasn't even an option, right? Like, it wasn't even an option.
Yep, bring a tape.
Yeah. Cool. Oh, you want to play Madden? Cool. Come to my house, man. Yeah, we'll knock it out. Play a couple of games, and I'll see you later afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, I totally agree with that. I totally agree with that. Trust me, that was one of those where it's like, and it's probably one of those where, just on the other side of it, you didn't even broach the question of even asking the bar. You just said, "Yo, here." Here's my blank tape. Just rub it off for me, man. Like, just give it to me tomorrow, and pop the tab off the tape too, because I don't want a mistake happening that you tape over my mistake.
There are no accidents happening with this one. Give me a pencil or a pen. Fail safe. You know? All right.
Yeah. Another one for me was Prince as well. And it was, I think it was more just because it was such a surreal feeling that another big legend was gone. And then, you know, that you think of the concept of no Whitney Houston, no Michael Jackson, and no Prince on earth anymore. Like, their music always lives on, of course, but just the fact that you're living in a world that those three iconic artists are no longer on this planet and you're not even 40 yet. Like, that seems ridiculous.
Well, in my case, growing up, I was a huge Michael Jackson fan. My brother was really into Prince. My older brother, Adrian, was really, really into Prince. And I remember, like, there was even a time where it was kind of like, you know, there was the battle for, like, who's really on top? Is it Michael? Is it Prince? Like, they were neck and neck.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? Dropping hints, like late 70s, early 80s. Right. And it's actually a very, it's like a time capsule. Of course, we're never going to see this again. But there was a concert, a late night kind of concert, where James Brown was on stage. And
I've seen that. It's on YouTube, right?
Yeah, it's grainy footage, but James Brown is on stage. And in the crowd, it's Michael Jackson and Prince. And James Brown calls them both down to the stage. And Michael Jackson does this quick dance to, like, you know, pay homage to James Brown. Then Prince comes on. Maybe a little bit tired, or maybe he didn't know that light. Remember the light post? There was a light post.
Yeah, he looked like he might have been. You know, he might have caught the spirit of some sort of hallucinogen, as you want to call it, drugs. Awesome. Maybe.
We're not here to analyze that.
He seemed like he was on a little something, but yes, but you appreciated it just the same, though. To be honest, I remember the clip. Go ahead, though.
So there's that clip, and then you just realize, if you think about it, there's the pioneer, who's James Brown, and he brings down his two, like, the two legacy, you know, the two legacy members, basically, who's passing, it's like the passing of the torch kind of thing, right? Like, for this era, oh my goodness, like, I'm performing, and here are these two guys that idolize me that are in the audience, I'm bringing them both down. And it's not like it was just Michael. Michael and Prince. Michael there were probably other Prince. Celebrities there, but they didn't get invited.
Yeah.
Right? And Prince was, in my opinion, and subject to my opinion only, like, this is my belief, mm-hmm. Prince is the perfect musician, and possibly, and unheralded, didn't really get his due in this regard, one of the greatest guitarists.
Oh, no, it's not even close. I heard a quote after he passed, and somebody asked Eric Clapton, they said, How does it feel to be the greatest guitarist of all time or of this generation? And he said, I don't know. You should ask Prince. You know, so
I don't think anybody did, but yeah.
Right? So, I mean, that's to tell you. You know what I mean? And with Prince, for me, and I remember those days when it was the Prince versus Michael thing. I don't know if a lot of people remember that, but yeah, back in, it's funny, when I was younger, I used to be sitting there wondering, why do people think this is the battle? Like, I was such a Michael Jackson fan back then. I was like you. I was such a huge Michael Jackson fan. And of course, when you, you know, you create something like the Moonwalk, how could you not be, right? But I remember as time went along and, you know, Prince's just, his catalog just, it just continued and it kept growing, you know? Like, in the 90s, he was still putting out quality stuff, you know?
Right.
And then, you know, like, when he passed away, it's like, I wasn't the biggest Prince fan, but where it was surreal for me was just not just the fact that another legend was gone, but then you had a chance to just go over some of his music, and you realize, and you just forget, like you forgot some of the stuff that he did. You know, even going back to, like, the late 70s, you're like, holy shit, I forgot about this one, you know? Like, I forgot about this track. I forgot about this one. Man, he sung that? You know, and not just that, but you're like, the guy did everything. You know, he played every instrument. You know what I mean? Like, so it wasn't just him just singing and dancing. Like, Michael Jackson was, you know, on a, like, you know, compared to Prince, he was on a level of his own when it came to dancing. But, I mean, Prince could get down too. You know what I mean? But Michael Jackson, as great as he was, as incredible as he was, and we all know how iconic he was, he didn't play instruments like Prince did. Which, I mean, you got to get a gold star for that too, right? So I think just losing somebody that mega, and then on top of that, it wasn't like, you know, he was sitting in some, you know, some hole just like a hermit and just waiting for, you know, this time to come down to die. Like, this guy was still putting out concerts even just before he passed away. I remember he came to Toronto and did a 3-hour performance about maybe 2 to 3 weeks before he passed. My sister went to it, and I remember she called me, like, she's like, she was saying that she was forever grateful for just going there, because just, you know, like, after he passed away, because she's like, man, she's like, for, you know, for a moment, I wasn't sure if I was going to go to it or not. And then that was like the biggest, like that was her boy, you know what I mean? And then for her, she was like, you know, the fact that I just saw this guy 2-3 weeks ago and now he's gone, you know, and again, to do a 3-hour performance. And I think he did, it wasn't like he did one show. I think he did like 3 shows in a span of 2 days. So, you know what I mean? So it's like, this guy still had a energy level to still perform his craft was extremely high, even in the fact that he was in his mid-50s. It was just the respect of the genius of Prince, you know what I mean, is what I kind of mourned a little bit, like, as a musical fan, you know what I mean?
I would say I totally agree. For myself, just the fact that the older I've got, like, the older I get, the more I'm starting to look into music and music history.
Yeah.
And it's not just about the videos like it was when I was a kid, or like the catchy tune, right? Mm-hmm. It's the complexity of everything that goes into making music. So when Prince passed away, obviously I started doing a little bit of research, because I'm like, okay, I'm never going to see this guy again. But I also knew from before, like, he left timeless images. So Calvin, if I were to tell you the Purple Rain cover, what direction is the motorcycle facing?
Right.
Left or right?
It's facing left.
Thank you very much. What is Prince wearing?
Well, yes, we got to get to the whole thing about that. He was wearing purple, yes.
Thank you. But you know that poster? You know that little red Corvette? You know the raspberry beret?
Mm-hmm.
You know that girl that was singing in the background and all those songs? I mean, but just the fact that he, you know, Apollonia 6, Morris Day and the Time, you know, like,
Sheila E., Vanity, once again.
Dina Easton, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, they used to be his opening acts. He hired them.
Yeah.
And then that spawned off Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis to take care of, like,
Janet Jackson.
You know, take off the Jackson New Edition. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the Minneapolis sound, all that from this guy that's 5'3", like to play basketball, immortalized in Charlie Murphy's True Hollywood Stories. You know what I mean? This guy from Minneapolis, and everybody knows him.
Who's doing the Sham God, God Sham God move on Charlie Murphy and his boys? Yeah, like
and offered up pancakes, Calvin.
and apparently too, though, Kim. That's the funny thing. He was actually for all intents and purposes, from what you hear, he actually was nice on the court. Like, that actually wasn't a lie. Like, he was actually nice.
Known for being a, yes, it's just he was bound by his height, right?
Yeah.
I think he actually made, what, did he help bring Carmen Electra into prominence as well?
Yeah, he did, yeah. So it's so it's like he had a Midas touch at you know, at, for, on top of that too. And like I said again, for him, like, I was more the MJ guy. So for me, it's almost like I compare it to almost like Tupac and Biggie. Like, as much as I love Tupac, but Tupac's death didn't hit me the same way Biggie's did. Because Tupac's death obviously was, you know, he had gotten shot a whole bunch of times. And, you know, like, so it was like more than a week. I think it was about a week or 2 weeks he held on before he passed away. So you kind of knew what was coming, especially hearing how his condition was after that whole, you know, the whole situation on the strip in Las Vegas. But I remember when Biggie died, it was just sudden. You woke up one morning and I got a phone call and it was like, yo, I heard Biggie died. He's like, man, shut up, man. You're just talking, you know, nonsense. Just stop listening to the rumors, you know? And then I remember I sat on the couch and brushed my teeth, sat on the couch, put on CNN. And whose face do I see on CNN? Christopher Wallace. And I'm like, oh my God, like that hit me. You know what I mean? So Michael Jackson's death, when he passed away, that hit me hard. But Prince's death didn't hit me the same way. But, you know, I respect the genius of what he did. You know what I mean? So for me, like that death was surreal for me. The next one for me as well was Muhammad Ali, the icon, the legend, one of the last living heroes of the civil rights era. I actually did a podcast on him, episode 5 of the podcast. We spent at least half of it talking about his life and his impact. And for me, what I took from his death, you know, is the fact that it's up to us to carry the legacy of what he did and what the civil rights era heroes did. And it's up to us to carry the legacy of what they did going forward by telling his story to the following generations. Plus, we have to tell it through our actions and how we live our lives and how we affect lives going forward. So for me, I felt like it's a reminder of the social awareness and the change that we've been experiencing this year as well. So it's ironic that he passed away and all these things are happening this year as well. His death was not just a reminder of what he and others before us did, but a reminder of how much work we still need to do.
Calvin, for Muhammad Ali, I have this one regret. I was too young. I was too young. And unfortunately, we were robbed of his ability to share his introspection with us, like in his later years, basically, because everything that he'd been afflicted with. But I got to say, too huge, too big of a symbol for us not to be doing right, like so many years after the fact, after everything that he fought for. Now that's a pod within its own, you know, on its own, absolutely. Like, but what he did, what he sacrificed, and that's the true meaning of sacrifice, basically, right? You're stripped. You have a title. You're stripped of your title. Then you're exiled. Then you're doing whatever you have to do to put food on the table. And then suddenly, after a while, you're wait a minute, maybe he was right. Oops. Hey, come back here. Yeah, you, the guy that we stoned and we shunned from society. Yeah, come here. Here, carry the torch. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just like, I don't think, just offhand, like, I don't think that there's been enough progress. And I know progress isn't, it's not all going to change overnight. But it just seems that this year, especially, it feels like there's a turn, like we're reverting back to the injustices that he was fighting against.
Right.
Rather than, like, progression towards a greater utopia. But there's one man who was at the peak. That is basically, in his era, call him the Michael Jordan of his era in terms of sports impact, right? Or the LeBron James of today. Imagine LeBron James taking a stand. Can you? Or does that seem like a foreign thought? And I'm not talking about like a 40-second commercial, to, you know, passing the ball to children and saying that, you know, in life and basketball, we do things together. No. That's like Nike saying, him taking a stand saying, you know what, forget my Nike sponsorships, I'm standing up for something. Take my sponsorships away. Take me out of Space Jam. Take me out from your billboards or whatever like that. I don't care. I'm standing up and I'm fighting for what I believe in. Does that seem like a foreign thought to you, Calvin? Or?
Well, like I said, I mean, I discussed that in that episode 5 podcast. But yeah, I mean, it's that's the thing. It's a tough thing to ask for athletes to do. You know what I mean? It's easier said than done. And at the same time, to be in that situation where, and I pose the question, you know, I almost want to refer people to go back and listen to that podcast, but not to rehash all the things that was said in that. But, you know, again, when you're asking as an athlete, do you sacrifice hundreds of millions of dollars for what you believe in? Now, those days were different. You know, the civil rights era, I mean, you're just fighting for basic human rights, you know, as black people in the 50s and the 60s and everything else. So that fight is a little bit bigger than what's going on today, obviously. But it's a hard thing to ask of athletes. Like, you know, I think I even posed a question, if Muhammad Ali was in this day and age, and you know, you have a $200 million worth of contracts on the line, do you make those same moves? I, you know, in my heart of hearts, I say yes, but I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, because that's a hard thing to ask of anybody. You know, so
it is. Well, doesn't that make him the greatest then? Because with him,
well,
you
yeah,
actually,
of course,
you
of course,
have a greater idea of what his answer might be.
No, of course, and that's why he is who he is. You know, because the average person would not do that. You know, and I mean, he was of a unique situation. And don't get me wrong, Kevin, the guy was still hated on for many years. You know, and I think it's sad to say, but I think Parkinson's also it helped him to be. I guess it humbled him in some people's eyes, I believe. Because even in that podcast, I mentioned too that I heard this quote by Jim Brown that said that he became the greatest, and people loved Muhammad Ali, you know, to the core when he lost his ability to speak. In that situation too, it's like we didn't get a chance to hear his introspection, as you mentioned before, which I totally agree with that. That would have been great, you know. But at the same time, I think seeing him, the condition that he was in, I think everybody just. It's almost like, not that he passed away, but I think everybody just went and looked back and appreciated everything that he did. Watching him and you know, dealing with Parkinson's disease accelerated the status of being a hero, I think. You know what I mean? In some aspects. He was already a hero to a lot of people's eyes, but I think it was like a open and shut case once, you know, the Parkinson's sat in. Like,
so are you alluding to the fact that maybe people were like, oh, let's throw him a ticker tape parade now. The man can't speak anymore. Yay! Look at him. He is the greatest. Aren't you the greatest? Do you think they're kind of like patronizing a little bit in some of the adulation they were giving him?
I don't know if necessarily is patronizing, but I mean, again, we were both too young to realize the full impact of it. Like, we understand the impact of it, but it's a little bit different when you're actually growing up as a child in the 70s or a teenager or a young adult in the 70s and watching, you know, Muhammad Ali do his thing, you know, on and out of the boxing ring, you know, like in and out of the boxing ring, I should say.
I'll throw this at you. What do you want to do, the comparison from things getting better or us becoming a more progressive society? Allow me to throw this exhibit into the fray. Colin Kaepernick hasn't even done anything remotely close to what Muhammad Ali has done. And we were ready to put him on, deport him, or we've made him the poster child for all things anti-patriotic, et cetera, et cetera. Do you see how that undercurrent is still there?
Right, yeah.
And yeah, all he did was just lower him. Like, he took a knee. He did have some things to say. Some of them were interesting. I mean, again, the Colin Kaepernick, I'm not putting them in the same light, but I'm just saying, like, just the mere hint of you taking a stand, or Mahmoud Abdul Rauf, or anyone that takes a stand in sports, you see how, like, there's that venom, like, shut up and play. We don't care what you think. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So for Muhammad Ali to do it at that time, when visible minorities had less rights,
and we're getting sprayed by hoses and attacked by dogs and, you know, hung and everything else, yeah, like, it's
open season, yeah. Right? So yeah, just to put it in context, like, it's in the harshest of climates that he actually took the stand, not in this politically correct, or what we think is politically correct, era of free speech and whatever the case may be. So it's huge.
Yeah, like I said, again, the fact that he's the greatest boxer of all time, and that was only just a part of the story, and I think it's almost like a smaller part of the story. You know, they go hand in hand, but one part of his life isn't bigger than the other. You know what I mean? Which is amazing to say of an athlete, right? What you do on the playing field dominates anything else you do normally, right? So the fact that both of them are probably on the same level playing field is like that. I mean, that's to tell you the impact that he had out of the ring. You know, for a lot of people of all races and everything else. So to me, I think his death was also a reminder of how we have to aim to positively impact the lives of others, you know. And then to segue into this as well, one of the biggest impactful deaths for me wasn't even a celebrity. I was thankful to have yourself and another contributor to South Shore, Av Headley, on episode 7 of this podcast. It was called No Justice, No Peace Enough. It was the deaths of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile. Those deaths were two separate gut punches in a week of in July that was littered with them, basically. You know, the black communities felt like a punching bag that Mike Tyson was teeing off on, you know? And just to rehash for some people who didn't get a chance to listeners or first-time listeners who didn't get a chance to peep it, this was basically the podcast that we had on the police shootings on unarmed black people. And honestly, it remains to be one of my favorite podcasts. I mean, every podcast, I mean, especially when you're starting out, Kev, it feels like your child right now because the process of it is still so new. You know what I mean? But it's still one of my favorites, you know, and I implore anybody to listen to it because I remember that feeling of, especially when Philando Castile died, like, I honestly felt like it was my duty to even have that discussion because it just would have felt inauthentic to how we just glossed over to talk about sports or music or pop culture, you know, what was going on, you know, anything else that was happening at the time. You know, but that those two deaths in a week that was just ransacked with them, and not including the, you know, all of the cops in Dallas getting, you know, unfortunately losing their lives in that shooting, that mass shooting as well. That was a heavy week, man. Heavy week.
Well, I'll say that if you didn't know, if you didn't know heading into July that there was an issue, you definitely knew after July, before August hit, that something's going on. Like, it can't be that it was so blatant and so repetitive, like just nonsensical garbage, just the repetition of, you know what, I'll call it repetition of ignorance and repetition of senseless loss.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm.
And it's just like, okay, the first one happens. Okay, maybe someone's going to do something. Before you have a time to finish your sentence, again? Like, you were waking up. You remember waking up, and then every time you check your phone, like, to start your day, it's like, oh, open shoot. Someone's been shot again. Oh,
yeah.
Police have opened fire on someone. So police shoot unarmed black man or someone, something along those lines. It's just like it took a toll. It was a very heavy summer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the angst, the anger in the nation was huge. And we're in Canada. And I can't say that it didn't mentally take a toll on me as well. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not living in those communities. Per se, like, I'm fairly remote in comparison, but just thinking about, like, can you imagine waking up in, let's say, a heavily populated or a heavy ethnic community in the United States, a heavy ethnic city, and a police car just drives by, and the police officer looks at you, the day of, like, the day that you see in your feed that an unarmed black man's been shot, right? And you don't know why he's looking at you. And you're looking at him, and he's like, well, why is this guy looking at me? You know what I mean? Like, it's just like
yeah, it was...
You know, it's like the elephant in the room that nobody still wants to address. So then the elephant has a trumpet, and the elephant starts playing a trumpet in the room. And they're like, hey, pay attention to me here. I exist. Nope, forget it. So then he brings out a steel pan and starts banging the steel pan, and no one's still paying attention.
While playing on the trumpet. Playing jazz,
exactly.
Playing jazz and steel pan at the same time,
and no one's doing anything. Everyone's like, just put my headphones on, forget it, don't want to hear about it. So yes, there was a lot of coverage about it. There, I would hate to think that they died in vain. I would hate to think so. And only thing we can hope for at the end of all this is justice.
I would agree. And on top of that, it accelerated a lot of the social movements that happened this year. I mean, the whole thing with the Black Lives Matter, I mean, that started basically after the shooting of Mike Brown and Ferguson. You know, but I think this year it accelerated. It really just put a platform on it. Social media has really helped in the situation where everybody has a recorded device to record and see these situations for what it is, and being able to upload it for the world to see within minutes, sometimes seconds, right? especially in the case of Philando Castile. And I think that putting it on, like, because of social media, which, you know, in some ways you got to be thankful for it, it helped bring awareness. And you have to laugh to see awareness, because this has been happening for so long, but it just, it raised awareness on a almost on a global stage, and it accelerated everything that happened after that, you know, especially with, you know, you referring to Colin Kaepernick and, you know, everything else that led to that. Like, it's just, it just accelerated the whole process. It wasn't like those deaths to me were so impactful. I think it might have been the most impactful, because it changed the way we viewed a lot of things this summer, you know, and the rest of the year out. And it caused a lot of people to be more aware of not just their surroundings, but of just their communities, social change. I think more people were invested just in finding out more information about certain things and being knowledgeable on their rights and just what's going, like, the awareness around them, just to basically be able to know what's around you, you know? So and especially socially. So I think it was like those deaths, you know, I hope they're not in vain either. I hope that, you know, the end of that is, because at some point, you know, again, and this is not an indictment on police officers, obviously, because not all police officers are bad, obviously. But at the same time, when you commit acts of that, like you have to do some sort of jail time. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can't go and just go shoot somebody and just walk away free. You know, like, there's got to be some sort of repercussions for that. So you're hoping they don't die in vain that way. But I think their deaths basically made everything else fall into place, and sort of all the social issues and awareness and for everything else for the rest of the year, and highlighted a lot of things, you know what I mean? So, which I think is also important, because that, you know, it needs to stop, obviously.
I feel that their deaths were not in vain for this one reason. Up until recent history, the only time that we actually had footage of these of injustices or abuse of power, let's say, the only time we had visual confirmation was the Rodney King beating.
Right.
And then after that, it was just, oh, that's an anomaly. Oh, someone just is filming something. Forget it. No, that didn't happen. No. Right? But now, you're absolutely right. With cameras and, you know, social media and everything like that, these images can go viral and people can't deny that they're not happening.
Right.
And finally, like, can you imagine what kind of footage they would have had 50 years ago?
Oh.
And like in the South, or, you know, in anywhere, basically, about, yeah, this is what's going on. Please pay attention. Well, do you have any proof? No, I don't have any proof. Well, don't you have a camera? I don't have a camera. Now, everyone has a camera.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is what happened. And now, for some officers, not all officers are bad, granted, but some of them, when they had excuses like, oh, he pulled a gun on me. No, he didn't. He was running away. You unloaded, reloaded, and shot him some more times. Like, your stories don't match up. That, to me, is a hope for justice. That, to me, it provides hope that hopefully there will be justice for these acts of, you know, unnecessary force, wrongful death, right?
Yeah.
You don't need, I don't know how much more evidence you need now that you have the, like, people have video. There's video all over the place. But only thing we can hope for now is justice, that their lives didn't die in vain. Please provide hope that justice can still be done.
Yeah.
And so, these are not celebrities. These are just, I guess, fallen heroes for the cause of justice.
Yeah. But I think they're the most impactful deaths, like, for sure, for me. You know what I mean? Like, they were definitely the most impactful. And, like, that's what I said before, like, they didn't even have to be a celebrity for that to happen. It was just, it just led to a whole movement and a whole awareness. So I think, and I agree with you, I don't think their deaths were in vain, because this needs to be put on the front door. You know what I mean? Like, it has to be put on the front door. It that elephant has to, you know, to basically, you know, crush a few buildings now. You know what I mean? It can't be just in the room in the corner anymore. It has to be. Like, we have to address this now, you know, we have to. And I hope that the pressure doesn't die down. I think it's like, I hope, because of social media, different things, I hope it's still like the pressure keeps being applied. You know what I mean?
Calvin, ever the optimist.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what you hope. You know what I mean? In light of all these things happening. So let's see what happens down the line. And yeah, it would, you know, seeing how you know, your man Donald Trump won the election, it's going to be interesting to see what the next 4 years are going to happen.
Before you put that out there, hold up, my man Donald Trump. Excuse me. Hold on. Allow me to preface this saying I'm a proud Canadian, and I value my passport as proof and my birth certificate.
You want to sing? You want to sing the national anthem right now, just to solidify it?
Look, if he wants a black man's birth certificate, I will gladly put mine forward. I don't know if he's still hung up on that or not, but I'm just saying. I hope that in these cases, because this is quite serious in our generation, I hope that the movement continues and it doesn't become diluted and mixed up with a bunch of other things. Because I feel even though these injustices were happening, people started blaming Colin Kaepernick for being against the military,
yeah,
and not honoring the flag. That's not what the message is about. So we're, you know, it's already starting, and then how good is this team anyway? He's not even starting. He's not the issue. We're being diverted away from the true issue. These men are still deceased, and there's yet to be justice done in both these cases. And there have been more cases since. Like, no, it's the 49ers are benching Colin Kaepernick. Colin, what do you think about this? No, that's not what the issue is, right? So I hope that people don't lose the message. It's not about jersey sales. It's not about the 49ers. It's not about Colin Kaepernick. It's not about what people think about Colin Kaepernick. It's about the injustice that exists, the inequality, and that is the message that people need to that we have to remember. Otherwise, their lives, these gentlemen died in vain. Here I am. This is what happened to me. Oh, but the 49ers are 2-11. No, who cares about the 49ers? You know what I mean? Like, don't lose. Just and the media can be very good at like swaying you to go in to look in an opposite direction, or to like take you off track. You know what I mean? Like, take the OJ. Sorry, just on a side note. Remember the OJ trial? How it ended up being from the evidence of the case, then ended up being to Mark Furman and his recorded tapes and everything else like that. You know? You remember that?
Yeah.
Like how the defense kind of just like turn people's eyes away from the facts of what really happened, of what the crime was. That is basically what I felt has happened later on this year. There was a cry for change, movement for change. People were giving speeches. People were, you know, volunteering in communities. Everything was, you know, there were movements happening. And then all of a sudden, it just seems like it's pattered down a little bit. And another thing is, Black Lives Matter, which is true, that became subject to criticism and critique and analyzing and dissecting. All lives matter. Yeah, we're part of that too. You know? Well, that's very self-centered. Well, let's take a look at the footage. Like, can you not see that there's something wrong here? Let me tell you something. Kelvin, if dairy farmers were being mowed down in Wisconsin, right? All of a sudden, dairy farmers are shot. Dairy farmers are shot. Then all of a sudden, a group of farmers get together. They're like, "Hey, can you stop shooting, please? Our lives matter."
And it's funny because Michael Shea, he had that comedy special that I think it was on Netflix, and he hear the clip where he's talking about Black Lives Matter, and he's like, "You know, that's, we're not even asking for anything. We're just asking for that it matters. We're just saying it matters. It matters. You know, like we're not saying that, you know, it's more important than yours. It just matters." You know, and people having a big issue with that. And yeah, honestly, I couldn't have said it better myself. It's just the issue of change and a cry for change was probably the most, it's probably the main thing that came out of their deaths, you know, was the cry for change. So what did these deaths in like 2016, all the deaths that happened in 2016, what did it mean to you?
To me, I would say, a lot of these deaths reinforce the fact that never underestimate the power that you may have in somebody's life. Your ability to, you know, to spark change, I think that's one of them. Your passion, sometimes follow your passion, that's another one as well. And just the ability of, like, how, like, I would also say that just how you can touch somebody else's life. Some of you never even know. I've never met any of these people, and a lot of them have touched my lives in one way, shape, or the other, right? In one form. It's okay. For example, if you were to take Gordie Howe, the only way I see Gordie Howe is with skates, no helmet, and a Red Wings jersey on. You know what I mean? And just doing what he loves for as long as he can possibly do it. I think he played for 4 decades?
Yeah.
Something along those lines, right? And he was an icon, like, for hundreds of thousands, if not millions of kids playing hockey. And all he wanted to do was play hockey.
Yeah.
Right? Or like Muhammad Ali. You know what? Sometimes you have to take a stand at no matter what the cost. The sacrifice might be great, but stand up for what you believe in.
Yeah, like you weren't doing it for, you know, to get millions of fans, or like if it happened in this day and age, you weren't doing it for the likes. You know, you're just doing it because it's part of your craft. You feel morally that this is happening to you and you want to take a stand for it. Something as simple as that impacted hundreds of millions of lives. You know, so I definitely agree with you with that.
Like to buck the system and challenge the status quo. When all the sheep are going one way, you can turn around and walk the other way. And yeah, you're going to run into some other sheep or head on and go through a bunch of adversity to get free, but he did it. You know, and he was just basically laying the path for others to follow suit. So we can only hope that we actually do turn around and be like, no, the right way is, you know, there's this way too. We can do better. Yeah. Prince, for his stature, he's like my musical Napoleon, man. He took over the world, right? When you look at him and he has, no, he's not the biggest man on the planet, but
yeah,
he's touched so many people that they wouldn't even know. Unless you're like someone, if someone were to tell you, oh yeah, yeah, that's my favorite. I hate Prince, but I love Sinead O'Connor. You know that song, Nothing Compares to You? Yeah, I know that song. Prince wrote it. What? Yeah, he sure did.
Yeah.
Right?
Prolific writer. And that's the thing, is it doesn't matter the physical stature, he was a giant. You know what I mean? He was a giant. That's a guy that would knock out 3-4 hour performances and concerts like nothing and do it again a few hours later, do it again the next night. No problem. For me, I swear, I think this year kind of carried a sense of introspection, just a reflection. It just made me take stock in what is important in my life without sounding corny. I think you just gotta find out what your happiness is and reduce the stress levels and find out what your passions are. You know, at this stage of our lives, you know, those things are what's most important. And you know, you don't keep yourself in bad situations, whether it's a relationship or jobs or what have you, and just live in a bubble of unhappiness. You know what I mean? I think life is too short. And, you know, as far as we know, we only live this life once. So I think for me, it's a constant reminder of trying to make sure that you're the best version of yourself every day. And whether it's you're the best father, best husband, best brother, sister, friend, employee, whatever it is, you know, you gotta have that sense of just being happy with yourself and finding things that interest you and not being ashamed of it, whether it doesn't matter what it is, not being ashamed of it, and just being able to just find out what you're happy is, man. Like I said, without trying to sound corny, but that's like, this year, that I feel like that's the key to life. Like all these people that we listed, every one of them, Kevin, got to do what they love to do. How many people can say that? You know, and I think that is super important. Like that's like the constant denominator the common denominator with most of these people on this list is they got to do what they love to do. You know, and it made people happy. It made themselves happy in some cases or most cases. But like, that's the thing. Like, they all got to do their passion or what they love to do. And I think if we can all reach that point, man, wow, that's an incredible life. You know, like somebody like, again, like going back to like somebody like Craig Sager, Alan Thicke. The reason why Craig Sager was having this chemotherapy treatments in the morning and still doing his job at night is because he loved what he did. You know, that's like, again, like how many people can say that?
Only the lucky ones, Calvin.
Yeah. So I think that's the message for me, that and it's what it took. That and then this other thing as well, before we go. Just the concept, and I remember hearing this in a Kanye, I think the last track of The Graduation, Kanye West. He had a song talking about Jay-Z, but one of the lines in it, one of the last lines is basically the concept of being able to give somebody the roses while they can still smell them, which is not something that we do a lot because, you know, of course, like when somebody passes away, you're always going to hear the best of what they've done and you're always going to hear just nothing but positive things. But it's like, why do we not, in a lot of cases, give those people that credit? And, you know, I guess in keeping up with this analogy, we give people those roses while they're still alive, you know, like in passing. Now you hear how great this person was, but did you let them know that while they were still on this earth?
That's one thing that we do a lot of times that really, it bothers me, but I don't know. I just wish that we did. I wish we did that more often.
Yeah.
Look, one thing is, I don't think that Alan Thicke knew that he was going to pass.
No.
You know, yeah. A couple days after being on sports TV, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's just, maybe we should take a minute. Maybe not just around Christmas time or whatever like that, but just say the hello, touch base while you can. Tell the people that you love them while they can still hear it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do that.
Yeah, or just appreciate them. Yeah, just tell them. And you never, and that's just the thing. Sometimes something as simple as that, you don't know how that could impact somebody. You know, just telling somebody, you know what, man, I appreciate what you did for me there. You know, or you know what, you told me something, you gave me confidence and I never forgot it. You know, like all these years later, you know what, I never forgot that. That changed my life and that made me want to do X, Y, and Z. You know what I mean? And go down this path and be a better version of myself. And something as simple as that, and you might not even know what you said, or maybe you remember the conversation, but you don't realize the impact it has. And you telling that to somebody, it's like, that's the gift. They say the gift is in the giving too. You know what I mean? So sometimes just for you, you got to do that for that person as well. I mean, that concept, yeah, like it's, we always look back on that. Like, you know, I hope these people were hearing this stuff while they were still alive. You know, or whoever may pass away, not just celebrities, but just anybody in general, of course. But you're hoping that people are getting these messages that they are loved and they are appreciated. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
So that to me is like the biggest thing in 2016. Just, I mean, the amount of deaths is unbelievable. The amount of people we lost and the impactful, iconic type of people that we lost this year was just, it was insane. I don't ever remember a year like this, quite like this, at least as far as I've been on this planet. But, you know, for me, it's like, that's the one thing I've taken away, like not being afraid to just, you know, as you said, like tell the people that you appreciate them. You are appreciated. And that's super important. Something as simple as that is so important. But, you know, for whatever reason, we don't do that until, you know, somebody passes away or they get really sick and they're like, man, you know what? Oh man, that was my homie. Or man, I love that. That was my homegirl. I love that girl, man. You know, shoot, I should have told her.
Calvin, why do you think that is?
I have no idea, Kevin. I have no idea. I just think it's just we're just caught up in our lives. We're just caught up in the day to day regimen of our lives, the routine of it all. You know, and I think that's probably one of the biggest factors of why we don't do that. We're always giving the benefit of a doubt that we're going to see that person the next day. So I think that's what it is too, you know? So it's, well, yeah, you know, I'll see them next week, you know, I'll call them later. Yeah. I know my mother's, you know, she wasn't feeling great. You know what? I'll call her in a couple of days when I'm less busy. And then, you know, and God forbid you get that call that just, you know, that makes you regret not sharing that message. You know what I mean? So I think that's what it is. I think a lot of it is just you're just caught up in your own world, the day-to-day routines of life, and you know, you take that stuff for granted.
Ugh, man, if we haven't learned our lesson yet, Calvin, we got phone calls to make.
Yeah,
I do. So yeah,
yeah. But you know, on that note, man, I mean, 2016 has been a crazy year. Like, this is the unfortunately the negative side of it. You know, but there's a lot of great things that happened this year. Part two of that, I'm doing the podcast with another past contributor of the AV this year, by the name of Sean Adonis. We're listing off the MVPs of 2016, and it's not just sports, it's pop culture, it's movements, it's everything else. And we're just going to list off our MVP candidates, and hopefully by the end we have an MVP or a couple of MVPs that we knock off for the night. But it's just, a more or less unique way of wrapping up 2016 instead of just talking about the whole year in itself. It's just a way of just picking out certain people that we think had an impact on the year, positive or negative, and rating it from there. But on that note, though, Kev, like, you know, starting off this venture, doing this podcast stuff, it's been... I don't want to say life changing, but it's been great to be able to attack this passion, you know, and being able to have you as a contributor, so to speak, and talking about different things is huge for me. You know, like, you're like part of a team with like other people that I discuss and have conversations with, whether it's in a chat group or just general conversation. But a lot of this sparked the idea of starting South Shore Ave in terms of just being able to capture the essence of the spirit of those conversations. And, you know, like this year, you being on, you know, specific and certain episodes, I mean, that wasn't by accident. So for you, I'd like to thank you personally because, you're a part of helping to push this passion that I have along, you know. And I mean, it's 9 months in, you know, I can't believe it's been 9 months in. And when I look at, I go back and I look at the amount of podcasts that I've put out this year in itself already. It's like, I looked at it the other day and I'm like, wow, I actually knocked off that amount, you know, so far.
True. You have been publishing quite a bit.
I think that's life, man. Like, I think you just got to do what makes you happy and attack passions, man. Because again, you only live this life once. And, you know, like, I thank you for being a part of this, because nobody does success by themselves. There's always a person or a team of people that help in that process. So we're at the very beginning of this. You know, I hope, you know, my plan is to go forward, especially in 2017, is to go bigger and better and just, you know, try to do this as the best way I know how and as the best way I can. You know what I mean? So for me, it's, you know, I'm hoping this, you know, 2017, the plan is just to be as the best version of me and just make this as big as possible. And, you know, this is the beginning of this. And but like people like yourself, DJ Chris Nice, Big Brother Kurt Headley, Sean Adonis, my, you know, D, a.k.a. the wife, as I call her, Jules, the commish, every guest that I've had on so far, this was part of the process, man. So it's, you know, I'm happy to say that. I'm glad that you're a part of it. So, you know, I thank you for that.
I love you too, dog.
You're an idiot. Anyways.
Now, granted, I think we both had the same epiphany. At the end of this podcast, I think everyone that's listening has one person that they should reach out to and call just to say hello.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you agree?
I agree with that 100%.
All right.
100%. But I know, get off my phone.
I'm not expecting a call from you in the immediate future, Calvin.
No, not at all. Not at all. Don't expect it.
I'm going to get caught up in my life for a bit, real quick.
Maybe a text, and it won't even be words. It'll just be an emoji, brother. but no, on that note, man, thank you once again for coming on the AV today, sir.
Anytime, bro.
So that was part one of the year in review. Part two, will come out later this week as we wrap up the year discussing the MVPs of 2016. The ones who made the most noise in sports, music, and pop culture. That one should be fun. As always, thanks for tuning in to the Av. And to continue to tune in to more podcasts, make sure you tune in to South Shore Ave and subscribe, I should say. Make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. For Kevin, this is Cal C. And this is the Av Podcast on South Shore Ave Radio. Until the next podcast, folks. Peace.